CJAM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CJAM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. First segment of our show is a post-dated one, so some of the events referred to may already have passed. In this segment of our show, Topher Endress will be telling us a little bit about Disciples Access. So what can you tell me about Disciples Access?
So Disciples Access is an organization that right now is in its very beginning stages. It's a network of interested people from within the Christian Church Disciples of Christ denomination generally work ecumenically and are happy to work also interfaith and multi-faith to provide increased awareness and resourcing, consulting, and direct support for disabled folks within our tradition. Generally speaking, most Protestant traditions of faith practices have always engaged with disability in some kind of practical way, but it's usually in a charity model, in a very often very helpful, but not necessarily integrated and not necessarily designed to bring about the principles of disability justice, in belonging and inclusion and welcoming and true access to leadership. And so Disciples Access emerged as a network of folks who are self-advocates, who are allies, and who are just interested in this work to share our perspectives, to uplift one another, and to take this message into the wider denomination in a way that has been mirrored by many other faith communities, both Christian and other faith traditions. What we found is that Disciples Access is meeting a need for our particular denomination to be able to talk about our unique contexts, because we know disability is such a contextual concept and lived experience. So it needs to have this sort of fine-grained support network in addition to some big, wide-reaching advocacy work that happens in faith communities across the world. So the Disciples of Christ denomination is finding an interesting challenge as we do this, because so many denominations within the Protestant tradition are so nationalized, and we are primarily an outgrowth of an American context, but we do have a presence in Canada. We have effectively broken ourselves into regions that allow us to better share a network at a smaller scope. And one of those, not exactly technically, but in practice, is Canada as its own region. And so we have a national pastor of the Canadian section of our denomination who happens to be autistic and lives with some other disabilities and particular supports. And so it's a great conversation for us to think about how do we support people within our churches, within our various ministries, who are either in leadership or might be seeking leadership, and how do we support their particular needs across the different contexts that they're going to find themselves in, both within the diversity of the American context and the diversity is within the Canadian context. So effectively, we're a clearinghouse. We try and support people personally and emotionally and spiritually when they find themselves lacking some of the needs that the church has not always been careful about caring for. We provide education, we provide handouts and resources, we put up sermons of people who talk about disability from the front, and we're trying to get a broader coalition of folks to care about disability more overtly at the educational level.
So I'm curious, what are some of the key benefits for someone with a disability experiencing that full inclusion, that that equality, if you will?
So we know through social research that having a disability does not impact one's desire to participate in a faith tradition. I'm not aware of differences between faith traditions in terms of participation rates, but I know in a broadly North American context, which statistically is pretty overwhelmingly Christian, people generally want to participate in faith communities at the same level, whether they're disabled or not. And so what we find is the participation rates for disabled people, though, really, really lag behind their non-disabled peers. Therefore, it's pretty easy to make the jump that inclusion, belonging, and direct access equips people to live out what they find important in their own lives and allows them the freedom and the flexibility to explore their faith in a way that is meaningful to them. So I think the biggest perk, if you will, of belonging is just that they can belong in the same way that anyone else can. Not everyone wants to participate in a faith tradition, and that's certainly their right, but anyone who does want to belong to a faith tradition or explore it ought to be able to explore it just as well as anyone else. So I think it's really just the freedom, and that's going to the first step for any person's journey, and it's going to look different for any given person as far as what they're seeking in terms of that faith engagement, but without the initial opportunity, it's really difficult for people to even explore what they want to get out of a faith inclusion. So I think that's kind of the baseline.
So do you have any advice for how we in society can move away from those charity models and the idea of disability pity, if you will, and start looking at real inclusion and meaningful belonging?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest ways that we can shift our mentality away from centering disability as the recipient of care in every context is to intentionally seek out disabled leadership and allow people with disabilities to take center stage in deciding a lot of our the directions that we go, the decisions that we make, by centering their experiences and giving them the right to be the decision makers. We will just naturally see that disability is incredibly wide, diverse, and that certainly there will be people who are seeking that type of care, who are seeking to be the recipients of charity, but also will find that people have the capacity to care for others, that they have the gifts and the talents to extend care outward. So I think a lot of this comes down to being able to see and visualize and understand that disabled people can be effective leaders, that they can be the decision makers, and by putting that out in a way that is clear to our communities, it will allow us the imagination that it requires to see the disabled people run the gamut, just as any subgroup of people run the gamut. I think by putting people up and being able to see their leadership more directly, whether it's in the pulpit as ordained clergy, whether it's in running some of the ministries that we have, or if it's in what we call lay participation or lay leadership, folks who are not disabled but who take on leadership roles within the church, by giving them the space and intentionally seeking their input as leaders, I think that we can shift from necessitating this linkage between disability and charity. And that's not to say, of course, that there aren't disabled people who are deserving of our care and our attention, but it is to say there needs to be a little more mutuality and understanding of interdependence, that everyone can care for one another, everyone has things they can offer to one another, and that being in that recipient position is not a moral category. It doesn't make you less than the person who's in the giving position. So I think that being able to see that diversity up front and to give those decision-making tools to disabled people very explicitly gives us that imagination to see it more more faithfully, frankly. I think it's a faith issue, a moral issue, as well as a social issue.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
In this next segment of our show, Sarah Ouster will be giving us some insight as to how to navigate disability conversations. So, when working with clients and bring them out into the community, how do you navigate disability conversations with, say, business owners, for example, to ensure that your clients get full participation?
So, it does depend. I remember we chatted about this briefly. It depends on the needs of the support individual. If there is a deficit somewhere that they need accommodations for, then that's when a lot of times we'll go have that conversation with business owners, right? A good example is like the gym. They're not being subtitles, and this one individual's like, I want to watch them speak while I'm walking, but I don't know what's going on. Like, subtitles would be great. So my role with any supportive person is to, yes, advocate for them, but help them learn to advocate for themselves, right? So that was an issue, but I wasn't going to go talk to the people at the gym without that person. That was a really good opportunity to be like, okay, so this is what you need. Let's go together. I have your back, and I will chime in if you need me to. I want you to take the reins on this one and let them know what you need and what would help. And they did. Subtitles are now on the TV, and I don't think they're the only people that benefit from that.
So, that being the case, how do you teach them to use their voices in a productive way as opposed to it turning into just noise or seen as angry or asking too much?
Well, I definitely think when it comes to using somebody else's business, most of the time, like, you're a paying customer, right? So, it's the voices of your customers that you need to listen to. So if one of those people that are trying to use your services are having issues, listening to them only helps everybody, not that person, because it is very unlikely that that's the only person that has that issue. So again, when it comes to like talking with somebody kind of about this, it's the same sort of message, letting them know that their needs are not an inconvenience or a bother to somebody. Accommodations are there to get people with disabilities on the same level sometimes as people who are neurotypical, you know, and that's frustrating, but it's so needed.
So, do you find that the business community and the community as a whole is typically responsive when you explain that this is something of universal benefit?
Again, so it's a lot of, like, just standing behind the person, both metaphorically and sometimes physically. But I haven't come into too much back and forth when somebody's like, hey, I need this, can you do something about it? Like, there hasn't been conversations that have been, like, uncomfortable or awful. It's just asking a lot of times for the bare necessity to be able to function, you know?
So, do you see any positive steps being taken? Community members, taking this into consideration in the first place without having to have those discussions?
So I'm going to say that there's been a huge shift in the last 10 years, and I'm going to attribute that to social media, TikTok, things of that nature. So on one hand, can it be negative? 100%, super negative. But on another, the more positive side that I'm looking at is people are allowed to use their voice, say how something affects them, and then find a community of a bunch of other people who feel the exact same way. So as a good business owner, individuals, like, you know, you serve individuals, right? So being able to use that as a tool is not something that was around 10 years ago, as well as, you know, asking individuals, putting up a survey, doing something, be like, hey, we want to be better. How can we do it? So I think there's been, like, a positive shift in disabled people having voices because we have them, right?
So what's interesting about that is when you mention things like sharing on social media and TikTok, for example, do you find that it's because of the human story being shared in this way, people are more responsive, rather than looking at the statistic and saying, yeah, this is an insurmountable problem. They see one person with a need and saying, well, yeah, I can do something about that.
You know what, that's an amazing point, Cam. And a lot of times putting a face behind all of those numbers is what moves something, right, in a positive direction. Is being able to be like, okay, wow, there's an actual person here who's affected by this. I'm just going to keep on going back to that one example because it's one that's fresh, but knowing that, okay, well, here's this individual and this is what they're struggling with and I can help with that. Like, I can be the difference in this person's experience at the moment, right? So I definitely think there's a positive effect for it.
So if you could see anything added to the current climate of what's out there for persons with disabilities to have their voices heard and their needs met, what would it be?
Really bad with answering really quickly and not taking the time to think about the things. And I think that's a question that needs more thought. It's a hard question because there's a lot of things, and that's the first answer that comes to my head. There's a lot of things, but what are those things, right? So I think a big one is communication and just taking the time to listen. When somebody expresses their needs to you, validate. Validation is very, very important. Making somebody not feel like they're a burden or just what they're asking is so insurmountable, you know? So I think those are two very good starts.
Absolutely. Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. Handy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Ah, the joys of winter.
Need snow tires.
The kids and I love this time of year.
And snowboards.
It's invigorating.
An insulated tent.
My wife, she prefers other things.
Craft stores.
But she comes along anyway.
New winter wardrobe.
She organizes everything.
Ski trips, vacation trips, and shopping trips.
Always some great thing she heard on the radio.
Spending again. Be where anyone who needs you can meet you. Be on the radio. Your customers are already here.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Topher Endress told us a little bit about Disciples Access, and we learned a little bit about navigating disability conversations in a community setting from Sarah Ouster Services. In this segment of our show, Coco Nicole Daigneault will be giving us an update on her yoga program, but with a special guest this time, her two kids, Gaia and Avian. So my first question is to Avian and Gaia. Since your mom's been doing the modified yoga program for people with disabilities for some time, what have you learned from her technique and the importance of this work?
I've definitely learned that it helps them a lot because I know from my mom that she's helped people gain a lot of movement when they weren't able to at the start. And she's talked to us a lot about all the things that she's done to help them, and I've met a few of them, and they're really sweet and super fun to be around.
It's a wonderful thing. So, for your mom, what's the latest with the yoga program?
Well, I guess the very latest is having my children joining the group, so that's been wonderful. And I'm continuing to see students and clients both at ICHA as well as in my own studio. We have groups forming all the time, private semi-private and small groups. So I always tell my students, if they're interested in doing some things one-on-one, whether it's online or in person at my studio, that they should contact me through my website. And I'll give your listeners that website. It's www.cocoyoga.ca. And through that, they can contact me and we can get some private groups going outside of all the wonderful classes at ICHA and through Community Living and John McGivney and all the other wonderful places I teach. So thanks for that opportunity, Cam, to share that.
Of course. Are there any groups lined up specifically for the summer, for example?
Well, the Community Living Essex group always does a spring outdoor class and a fall outdoor class. So I would say if people are interested in trying it out, we are going to be doing those classes and they're always offered for free. We do them outdoors at Optimus Park, and I'll be posting those dates very soon. As soon as we confirm that, there's usually a spring group and a fall group. So that's a really nice opportunity for people to come out and try class in person at the park, and that's offered for free. So that's a great opportunity coming up.
So on a slightly more personal note, what's it been like having your kids following in your footsteps and learning the value of being alongside persons with disabilities?
Well, I really like that question. I guess it's always been great. My kids did the children's special needs program with me when they were very, very small. We taught together at the John McGivney Center. I don't know if you two even remember that. You were so little. But they were involved right from the get-go with working with, you know, children with special needs at that time. And I think it's just become sort of a natural part of their life. They've always, been around my students and they've interacted with them through their whole lives. And now it's just really nice to see them doing their high school volunteer hours with ICHA. And do you guys have anything you want to add into that about how you've really been kind of working with special needs people your whole lives? What do you think? I think they're nervous to speak.
I really enjoyed it. It's helped me build definitely a lot of communication skills, especially now working with them for volunteer hours. We're very social with them. They're very easy to talk to and have lots of things to say, and the conversations just flow really easily. So that definitely helps me build my communication skills up a bit, which is fun.
So do you find that you're sort of opening doors for them as well, like making them feel included when you go alongside them for your volunteer hours?
Well, we went to the basketball at the, what was it called?
St. James Elementary.
St. James Elementary, and I met a bunch of really nice people, and we played basketball with them and included them in all of the games, and we kind of just made them feel like they were normal people, which they are, and we kind of, I don't know how to put it, like we just include them in everything.
Yeah, it just feels normal, just inclusive and fun. And
it's like talking to someone without it, like it doesn't really feel like there's a difference.
But I understand what you're saying. You're just saying that you don't even really see or notice the difference, because like everyone's like, just hanging out. Yeah, go ahead, share about that.
I don't know, it's just like, it kind of just feels the same as talking with my friends that I've known for years. It's like just a lot of conversations. They love to talk.
Yeah, that's great. That's awesome.
That's an amazing thing in so much as these people with disabilities might carry that forward in their lives, recognizing that they should, as you said, be part of the community and just be included because they're fun people to be around.
They sure are. Absolutely.
So, what are the next steps forward with your yoga work?
My daughter is this summer going to be helping me build my channel, so that's kind of fun. You know, I never really thought I would be an online yoga teacher, and then the COVID lockdowns taught me how to teach yoga online. I had to do that, and I just have seen how widespread that can be, how many people that can help. So my daughter and I, she's going to do that with me for her high school co-op program, and we're going to build my channel so that people can go online and do some short practices with me and some long practices with me, and be able to do that whenever they want through online offerings. So that's kind of something fun that we'll work on this summer, and we hope to have that ready by September, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that'll be great.
I'd like to thank all of you for taking the time out to do this, but if you could stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
For sure, and thank you, Cam, for everything.
It's my pleasure. You know, my friends, I think Coco has taken exactly the right steps, for she's modeling respect, understanding, consideration, and support for persons with disabilities. Reaching out to young people, getting them at an impressionable age, teaching them that disability is simply a part of life is critical, for this will dictate how persons with disabilities are treated in the future. For example, if a young child sees a family member with a disability, they're going to grow up, they're going to accept that this is just normal. It's just a matter of uncle such and such moves a little differently, or aunt such and such thinks a little differently. They're just going to look at disability as a factor of life, not the defining factor, not the totality of one's existence, but chances are they'll have a greater understanding, a greater empathy, and yes, even a greater respect for persons with disabilities. Now, Coco's kids are doing this as a school requirement, that's true, but the experience they gain standing alongside the disability community might help shape their futures in ways we can't yet see. And for Coco herself, teaching that respect, teaching the virtue of equality, teaching that with a little support and a little guidance, a person with a disability can improve their strength and their potential, that's really an amazing gift to impart to anyone. And it's not just in our own families we should be doing this. We should be modeling this respect everywhere we go in the community. Let our ideals match our actions. If we say we're going to build up people with disabilities, let's do it. If you're an organization dedicated to celebrating disability life, do that. Make it about what you have set out to do. If you're going to build up people with disabilities, build up people with disabilities. Don't be beholden to anyone's agenda. For the fact is, disability is simply a thread that weaves through every fabric of life. It is a part of us all. You can't go into anyone's family history and not find a story of disability life. That story being one of strength and courage and just asking to be counted and considered. It is true that disability life becomes more real to us, if you will, when we're close to it. When we have a day-to-day experience of it. It goes from being a cold statistic in a textbook, what appears on the surface to be a hopeless situation, to the story of a person who's done what we considered impossible, someone who's blazed a trail and opened a door. They don't live necessarily to be quote-unquote inspirational. They live to follow their hopes and their dreams. But if this makes it that much easier for the next person who would follow in that path, so much the better. But honestly, you have to look at the totality of the person. You have to ask, is the disability all they are? Or do they have the potential to grow, to be something more? Young people are always asking those questions. What's possible? What can we create next? And the more we model it, the more they're going to pick up on it. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.